This is a conversation with Rachel Kirham, CTO of Mindbridge, who brings deep experience in data science, AI strategy, and financial technology. She focuses on using AI to improve risk audits by analyzing 100% of financial transactions while emphasizing ethical AI transparency and customer-driven innovation. I appreciated her perspective on building adaptable leadership cultures, promoting gender diversity in tech, and grounding AI in real-world value. Great. Very nice to meet you, Rachel. Thanks for joining the Humans on AI podcast. I appreciate your time. I review a little bit of your background and your career, but I would like to hear from you actually briefly, mainly because I realized that you've been in Mindbridge. Now you're a CTO, but you've been in Mindbridge. So what was that process to become now the leader, one of the leaders? And so on.
Cool. Yeah, good. Yeah. So hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Kirkham. I'm Mindbridge's Chief Technology Officer. So yeah, I've been at Mindbridge for almost 6.5 years now. And prior to that, I was Head of Data Analytics Research at the National Audit Office. So I guess I've been doing data science for 13 years or thereabouts. Kind of started with analytics and really progressing more into data science. And so when I joined Mindbridge, I had like quite a unique set of skills. So I had subject matter expertise in terms of the kinds of data we were working with and the customers we were serving. And I'd also done like a lot of different analytics in this space. So when I joined, I really just started kind of thinking about what should we do from an AI strategy perspective to broaden the scope of the analytics that we offered in the platform. So Mindbridge primarily provides unsupervised machine learning at scale. So we're really looking for like anomaly detection for like fraud and error at lots of different use cases. And so I was thinking about like, do we have good algorithm coverage? Like what more could we do and so on? But over the years, I not only have been driving like the data science research, I've been kind of doing more product management and really just pushing on a whole bunch of different fronts, thinking about how we use agents. So just before I was promoted to CTO, I started building my first multi-agent system to kind of wrap Mindbridge's like deep analytics core with agents and stuff like that. So I had quite an interesting set of experiences here at Mindbridge, but really just driving forward on like, how do we provide the best AI to our particular kind of customers is kind of how I got here.
That's great. How has your journey to becoming CTO changed the way you think about leadership? Because I guess that when you started and now like it completely changed the way that you, because before you know were a leader, now you are. So how has this,
Yeah. So I guess I have had the benefit of having quite a bit of leadership training, actually. And I do think that the adoption of AI in the sector, so things like using large language models to code, as an example, like actually means that leadership is changing in the sense that you have to build a culture of change into your organization, right? Like making sure people are really clear about objectives and where we're going, but also being willing to be flexible and adjust, because you know the technologies we're using were just fundamentally different like 2 or 3 years ago, and what's possible now wasn't possible then. So you actually can't plan really far into the future because you don't know what advances are going to be made. And so actually it's really about creating focus, right? Leadership is about like making sure people really understand what are our values, not just in the way that we work with each other, but like what are the values we're taking to our customers and how does that shape the decisions that we make and how we adopt these new technologies. So it's really about getting people to engage or change. And I feel like leadership has always been a bit about that, but it's just one of the most critical things you have to do now, just to make sure that we're kind of, adapting to the environment and still doing our best.
And what do you think about AI and leadership? Because I mean, I don't know if it's true, but it's, you know, there's a lot of media and a lot of news about how AI is going to change the whole game as well in general and in every market that it's happening right now. Everybody's in AI, right? Every company is like, AI, I mean AI, you know? So what is your perspective about that?
Yeah, okay. So I think With AI particularly, like it's a tool, right? AI is a tool, and you can use it to do a really broad range of things now. But to add value to your customers as a software company, it has to be really grounded in like what they actually need to do, right? It's not just AI for AI's sake. It's how can I use AI to make this workflow much more efficient, or make the quality of the work that I do much higher, or increase the scope of the work that I do, right? There are so many different ways you can use AI to do those things. And so staying really grounded in like, what do my customers care about, and how can AI be part of the solution? It's really easy to try and bolt AI into like lots of different places, but actually, even now, like large language models are non-deterministic, and they can still go wrong quite a bit. Like I spend a lot of time working with LLMs to do coding, and they can be confidently wrong. They can go in the wrong direction. So when you're providing a tool to people, you want to make sure it's really grounded in things that are still deterministic and still work all of the time, right? People really care about software that is like well engineered, stable, and provides consistent results. And so, yeah, just making sure that whatever you release is grounded in some of those core software engineering principles makes a big difference. But I love AI, right? Like I work in the industry, I use it for everything I do now. And it has a really the ability to really accelerate your thinking and kind of execution. But yeah, when you think about AI strategy, for me, it's yeah, making sure it's designed to work, and it's designed to be effective in the for your customers' particular problems. So hopefully that makes sense.
Nice. I hear something that you say about coding, and I was thinking, because when I was reading about some accomplishments that you are very proud of, you said that learning to code and teaching other people to do. What do you mean with that? Like, it's coding, like you love it,
Yeah.
or what's
So
that?
I don't come from like a traditional software engineering background, and I originally learned to code when I was in my very early 20s. I learned a programming language called R, which is used for statistical programming, and I taught myself to program in R actually. I was trying to solve a particular problem, and it cut down the work required for that activity from 6 weeks to like 3 hours. It was like a huge improvement in efficiency. And so, because of that, I ended up building a program in my last organization to teach everyone else that was in an analyst how to use R. So I ran like multiple training workshops to teach people how to program who'd never programmed before. I like brought a software called DataCamp into the organization so I could teach everyone a little bit of coding. I got involved with R Ladies, which was a kind of international kind of we used to do meetups basically to sort of get more people involved in programming. So I just think it's just so powerful as a way to express your ideas, but also to do like, yeah, just really high quality analysis. So like both learning myself and then being able to share that with others was like just, yeah, a huge thing for me. And it's funny now because I would say like my current drive, certainly in my organization, is to get people to do agentic coding. So thinking about kind of harness engineering and really understanding how you can use LLMs to generate high quality code, not just code, because there's a difference, right? And so yeah, that's the next frontier, right? That's what I'm trying to get people to engage with. And I'm taking all the lessons from when I taught people to program at my last organization and bringing that into my change management, getting people to agentically code. So yeah.
That's great. I've never met someone so into going to university. Like I can feel like you're so passionate. So that's cool. So Rachel, I'm talking a little bit about the company that you're working at, like MindBridge. So for my understanding, you guys analyze 100% of financial transactions rather than rely on traditional sampling. So how does that change the way organizations think about risk audit and trust?
So I guess, so I was an auditor in a previous life, and I remember when I was like a junior auditor and I was looking at a really high value account area, and I had to do a sample of 25. That's what my I was expected to do. And it really bothered me that I wasn't looking at more of the transactions. And so in audit, we call this the expectation gap. So the public expect auditors to look at everything. In reality, they can't do that. They don't have the time to do that. But AI can do that. It can look at all the transactions. It can consider what looks unusual from a statistical standpoint. I mean, machine learning is great for this, actually. And so MindBridge can look at 100% of the transactions. It can look at the building expectation of what it thinks is normal for that transactional set, and then it will show the user the differences. So we ensemble all the results together and produce a single score. And it really can change the way that an auditor thinks about what they should test. So rather than having to pick a random sample, they pick the 25 most unusual things in that set, which is a massive improvement in terms of it not just being based on feel, but being based on the things that look unusual from a distribution perspective. That is a big difference. And also it means that AI's looked at everything, right? So everything it thinks it looks normal, you have a lot more confidence that it actually is normal, rather than having to rely on statistical methods to get your confidence. So that's a big difference. I think for enterprises who are using us, it also allows them to build that kind of continuous improvement cycle. So if you've got 100% of your transactions being analyzed all the time, you can find everything that looks potentially wrong, and you can go and systematically fix those things and just improve the quality of your finances as a company. And I just think that's a really powerful way to bring AI into an organization and, yeah, just make transformational change in how you do your business. So that's pretty cool.
Okay, I'm talking a little bit about ethical AI. Do you guys have any principles that you follow while developing AI in your team?
Yeah, so MindBridge was one of the first signatories to the Montreal Declaration on Ethical AI Development. For me, it's something I'm quite passionate about. So when I joined MindBridge, one of the things I was thinking about was, okay, it would be great if we had some third-party assessment of our algorithm. So it wasn't just us saying that they worked the way that they did, but actually getting someone else to look at it. And so through a couple of connections, I found these two guys, Adriano Koshiyama and Emery Kazim, and they're the founders of a company called Holistic AI. And they'd written this really interesting academic paper. I really love academic papers on algorithm auditing and like how do you start to build a more ethical practice around assuring algorithms and developing trust in AI, right? And so I reached out to them, and they were just in the process of setting up Holistic, and they were like, "Yeah, we can come and audit your algorithm." So we gave them like glass box access, so completely transparent access into how the algorithms worked. We gave them access to all of our documentation, and then they like did an audit basically on kind of privacy, robustness, resilience, and bias. And so we actually published those results. We gave them to all of our customers. I think we were probably one of the first AI companies to really go through this process. And we do that every year. So every year we get audited, and they check that the way we describe our algorithms is as accurate as possible. So any of our customers can go in and read the documentation, and there's like no black box about how it works at all. And I just think that's a really important thing for building trust in these algorithms, particularly in highly regulated environments. So yeah, that's kind of part of our values. And explainability is, I guess, one of the key things for us, just making sure that it's not ambiguous how our platform works and how it's reached a particular conclusion. And that will flow all the way through our agents. So having transparency about what the agent is doing, like its reasoning and so on. So I recently built an agent, and I just stream like its chain of thought into the user experience. So the user can actually see how the agent is like stepping through its thinking and stuff. So just, making sure you create that transparency in any kind of AI you bring to the platform, basically. Yeah. And I have to say, I was only involved for like the very first bit. So, because I had a lot of other work commitments. So I can't take credit for like how big it got. So the guys did an amazing job there. But yeah, when I was at the very beginning of my journey with learning to program in R, I went to a presentation by one of my colleagues when we were setting up Our Ladies in London and Chin. And yeah, she did a great job. And I was really interested in helping her. I was like, I can come and talk about what I've been working on. And together with a number of other people in London. So Claudia and oh gosh, the other girls that we were working with, we put in a submission to the Linux Foundation to get some funding to set up Our Ladies Global. And there were a couple of people in San Francisco that were also kind of working on it. So, and yeah, so we got some funding and we continued to kind of grow, certainly the London chapter, but then we had a bunch of other chapters spring up in lots of other parts of the world and it just kind of exploded from there. So, but I just, when I was involved, for me, it was just really important to try and get more women involved into kind of into tech in general, but also like, it's really important women are involved in kind of AI development because it can help reduce bias in the models that are being trained. And so, yeah, the more people that get involved, the better, really.
That's great. What changes have you seen for women in technology?
Gosh. I think over the last 15 years that I've been involved, I think there are some changes in terms of just gender diversity in the workforce. I think things like Pie Ladies and Our Ladies and other initiatives like that can really help create community, which can be a really helpful thing, particularly if you're starting out in and kind of getting involved in these tech communities. And there's a lot more of that exists now than there was when I started. I'm sure I had something in my inbox today for Women Who Code. So there is a lot more kind of organizations to create that community. I think that's probably the biggest change that I've seen. But yeah, there's always more to do, I would say, in kind of improving engagement and diversity. But that's not just in tech. I think that goes all the way back to like STEM, like getting more girls involved in STEM subjects. So my poor daughter, I am already running like teaching her to do science experiments. So but that goes way further back than women in the tech industry. I think it's getting kids involved as well. So anyway, I could talk about that for a while, but yeah.
That's great. I feel like I don't know, like it's a very slow progress. I still feel like there are way more men in technology. I don't know. It's like it's still there's a lot of work to do. So I appreciate your work, like what you are doing. So yeah, that's what I wanted to kind of mention this because I found it very interesting. Rachel, so during your career, which challenges taught you the most? Like just make it short to take that and give me three, for example, you know?
Yeah, okay. So I think so one of the things that I think can be really challenging is when you're working really with a really diverse group of people, getting to consensus about the problem you're trying to solve and arriving on the solution to that can be quite a bit of work, right? And I think for me, my philosophy is actually it's much easier to drive towards a solution by prototyping and iterating. And one of the things that really excites me about agentic coding tools is it really enables that kind of workflow. So, but drawing consensus is really hard and, trying to communicate as clearly as possible, but also bearing in mind that different people use language in different ways. I think that's like one of the biggest lessons for me as a leader is, yeah, driving consistency can be challenging, and thinking about different ways to do it is important. I think the other thing, biggest challenge, certainly in the last my year at career at Mindbridge, funnily enough, is going to seem a bit weird, but remote working. So when I joined Mindbridge, we were all in the office still, and then the pandemic hit and we all completely changed the way that we worked, and that has been a blessing, but also has again forced people to really think about how you're deliberate with communication. And so surprisingly, I think some of the biggest challenges are always communication related, rather than technical. challenges. It's like working with people and getting people to work together, right? So, but anyway, we've definitely got some great ways of dealing with remote working. I love Slack. I'm on Slack all the time. I'm like one of the third highest user of Slack in my organization. But yeah, building those like, informal relationships through those kind of mediums can be really helpful in kind of getting consensus and alignment as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think communication is one of the hardest thing, you know. I feel like it's something that I feel like it's never enough. It's never enough, you know. And more when there's a lot of people, we all have so many different opinions, perspective, experiences that it's people are complex, let's be honest. We all,
Yeah.
myself too. I put myself in there. But yeah, I found it very interesting the last one, communication. I feel like it's everywhere, not just at work. It's in general in life. So great mention. Rachel, where do you see MindBridge in 5 years? Like, what are your expectations for the company?
Yeah, so from my perspective, our vision is really to be the AI platform for financial professionals. And we talk about this concept called autonomous financial oversight, which is really about having an AI that can have all of the data from your financial processes stream into the platform, and our agents can like spot emerging patterns that might indicate that something's going wrong and you need to go and investigate that. And if there's something that actually needs remediation, being able to flag that to the people that own the process. And the reason this is so important is in finance, all of the major software providers are rolling agents into their software. But given that agents can still be a bit unpredictable, there's a real risk that people's financial processes kind of get new kinds of errors like creeping in because there's more agents and getting interacting with the transactions. And so being able to have like an independent AI just keep track of everything and assess it is like probably going to be really important control mechanism to kind of enable these kind of more autonomous finance processes. And what that requires us to do is to be able to stream data into the platform, be able to risk score it in near real time or real time, being able to have our agents autonomously go and collect evidence or critically evaluate what the AI, the machine learning is telling them, or interact with the user in some way, allow the user to dynamically explore the results of the platform. So our agent strategy is all around making the platform more autonomous from end to end. So configuring the bringing data into the platform in investigating the result, results, exploring the results, all of that. So that's going to be a huge piece of work for us, but it's going to be essential to being kind of tightly integrated into the new agentic ecosystem that's emerging. And to support all of that, we're really focused on how we can train more intelligent models that really understand finance and tightly integrating that into our platform. So, I've just been working on a demo of using MindBridge within like results within Claude, and there's going to be some really interesting integrations with all of these major providers to kind of infuse their intelligence with like really deeply like deep analytics, right? They're not necessarily designed to do deep analytics. That's what MindBridge is great at. So we can provide that like depth of analytics that the LLMs can't provide themselves. So,
It looks promising, though.
yeah.
So, Rachel, which advice would you give to your younger self at the start of your career?
Okay, if I was going to look back, I think the main piece of advice I would give myself is probably to work a little less hard, actually. And that I was going in the right direction. I think, I was fortunate in some respects in my 20s to really push myself quite hard and get to where I am today. But I think, like, maybe, yeah, looking after myself a little bit more would have been a good idea. But also that, I was right about the AI thing being important because I remember when I was thinking that in the like, I don't know, 2012, that I was right. So I think maybe a bit of reassurance would have been good as well. No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.